I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, let's talk about nihilism. I know it's heavy. I know this. But stay with me. My bestie Mon and I were out about town the other day looking for lock jewelry. Fun fact, I'm 2 months into locking my hair and I want to put things in it to look fancy. Anyway, we were having lunch and talking about all sorts of things. Somehow we ended up talking about podcasters and personalities we follow. Now, like many people, I've been deliberate about who I follow or allow to roll in my timeline and the podcast I listen to. It should be no surprise to you that I follow and listen to a lot of Black women who helped help me think about how I cherish my talents and energy, as well as pay attention to how the people in my life support me. But I also find myself exploring other corners of social media and learning-based podcasts. Now, maybe it's the new year and everyone's doing their top lists and their best of episodes, but I was reflecting on 2018's ups and downs and the partial government shutdown. A shout out to everyone on furlough. My love and prayers are definitely with you. Anyway, a quiet but persistent thought occurred to me when I was thinking about all this. It would be easier to block yourself off from the world and not participate in society. To drop out. Wouldn't it be much easier to be happy? So much emphasis is put on everything these days that even the podcasters I listened to seemed exasperated at times this past year. Have you even been on Twitter lately? It could be a real cesspool if you go too deep or stay too long. So why not just walk away? Everyone knows that wanting to escape from problems is a reason some people depend on drugs and psychedelic substances. Shoot, the essence of cults or the cult's appeal is to set yourself apart from this cruel and wicked and pointless society to seek a higher and more fulfilling plane of existence. And I'll go there. Even organized religions, especially the Abraham religions, walk dangerously close to separatist ideology in their doctrine. But this all seems to be too much, you know? Like, I need to take a step back and slow down to recalibrate my mind and spirit, you know? So, as a way to screw my head on straight for the new year and to set my flight plan, so to speak, I want to go down a dark and windy tunnel that is nihilism by using a German philosopher and an English playwright. And then I want to walk through to the other side of that tunnel by using Buddhist teachings and an Old Testament book of the Bible. We're going down a dark and winding path, but we'll come back out into the sunshine by the end. I promise. Let's go. If you've studied or are familiar with philosophy at all, then you've heard of the late 1800s German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche, who is associated with the concept of nihilism, and who also influenced the likes of Sigmund Freud, Albert Camus, Nietzsche's adversary in many ways, and Western philosophy as we know it today. However, before Nietzsche, nihilistic thought was around in society in both art and religion for centuries. More on nihilism and religion later. Regarding art, there's a famous scene in William Shakespeare's early 1600s play, Macbeth, in Act 5, Scene 5, where the main character, Macbeth himself, after learning of his wife's death and with enemies slowly marching on his castle to kill him, delivers this sorrowful and nihilistic monologue. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time. And all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow. A poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. I think I read Macbeth when I was 12 or 13 one summer, thanks to an older cousin of mine who was also a school teacher in Detroit, Esther. God rest her soul. I'd spent the summer with her and some other older cousins, and I left with Macbeth and a few other teen drama books, thanks to Esther. She actually gave me Macbeth and Measure for Measure, though I'm not sure why, because I've never really read Measure for Measure. But anyway, Act 5, Scene 5 in Macbeth stuck with me because, number one, it was mesmerizing. Number two, it was dramatic. And number three, it didn't offer reassurance. I didn't want it. I liked the bleakness of the scene. At that point in my life, everything had so much meaning that it was nice to hear someone say that all this order, read rules here, I was a teenager after all, meant nothing. It was my first radical thought. The root word nihil is Latin for nothing. And Merriam-Webster defines nihilism as a viewpoint that traditional values and beliefs are unfounded and that existence is senseless and useless. While I understood the bleakness of what Macbeth said when I was 12, I didn't recognize where it came from. I didn't have the bandwidth to understand the absolute heartache, regret, and despair that fueled the emotion behind the words. Remember, Macbeth was just talking about how unfazed he was by hearing blood-curdling screams of anguish. Just when he thought he had seen it all, he's told his wife has died, and in that moment, he breaks. When he thought things couldn't get worse, they do, and he responds not out of profound wisdom or careful thought, but pain. He also learns that his enemies are coming for his neck, following a prediction he rejected earlier in the story. So Macbeth ain't exactly in a place to be nobody's life coach, you know what I mean? And if you have read or watched the play, you know how the story ends. Macbeth dies at the hands of his enemies, arguably a victim of his own making due to poor choices and his ego. Now, you and I might not have Macbeth-sized problems or mistakes, but we do find ourselves in sorrowful situations where it's hard to find meaning or to see the other side of the dark period. And this is where religion and spirituality come into play for many people. And this is also the point where my research for this episode and perspectives on nihilism take a turn in ways I hadn't expected. Gautama Buddha, or Siddhartha Gautama, in the Sanskrit language, is credited as the founder of Buddhism, is the principal figure in Buddhism. According to Wikipedia, he is believed by Buddhists to be an enlightened teacher who attained full Buddhahood and shared his insights to help sentient beings, read humans or living beings, end rebirth and suffering. Okay, in short, Buddhists believe we are given chances to do what is necessary to transcend suffering by achieving enlightenment. The root word Buddha, B-U-D-D-H, means awaken. In this context, chances are new lives. Not the kind where we move from one place to another or change careers, but dying and being physically reborn into another life form. The only way to end suffering and stop being reborn is to attain nirvana. But what is nirvana? Ironically, not the early 90s grunge band and their angsty interpretation of abandonment. Buddhists believe nirvana is a state of nothingness, non-possession, and non-attachment. It's a place. The Sanskrit term for nirvana, which I will not pronounce, but you are welcome to look up, roughly means empty vessel. So the highest form of being, according to Buddhist tradition, is the detachment from everything of value. or too detached from everything of value. That is cars, clothes, money, family, friends, loved ones, and yourself, your life. All of this in a quest to be a new and better final form being on this new plane of existence. An attractive mission for people searching for a greater purpose and meaning in life. As the story goes, many of Buddha's critics interpreted his teachings about achieving nothingness to be nihilistic in nature, and that he wanted people to neglect themselves to the point of perishing, harming or otherwise making themselves, killing themselves, really. But he argued that nihilists center themselves, while he taught about forgetting yourself completely. Again, obtaining nirvana would put an end to suffering and therefore death itself. To leave the world the things they gave meaning, to and find value in. This conversation was happening in ancient northeastern India over 2,000 years ago, which is super wild because nirvana itself is part of a spiritual concept which is the cornerstone of Christianity. Christians believe the books of the Bible, namely the Old Testament, set the scene for the events that are depicted in the books of the New Testament, namely the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, the champion that conquered death, whose believers are encouraged to metaphorically die to themselves and live a life devoted to charity in their quest to achieve a better life after physical death. Sound familiar? Jesus taught that true believers must give up all physical possessions and live minimally so as to not be distracted from doing the most good on this plane to fully appreciate the next. In this context, the Buddhist's nirvana is the Christian's heaven, where believers achieve their final form. So, with these parallels and similarities, does the Bible say anything about nihilism? Of course it does. There are figures in the Bible that carry nihilistic views, especially in the face of adversity. Take, for instance, Job's wife, who demanded that Job curse his God and die when he had lost his wealth, children, possessions, and had become afflicted with terrible disease. Arguably, the most nihilistic book in the Bible is in the Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes. The speaker in the book, simply referred to as the preacher, but whom many believe to be Solomon, the king of David, the son of King David, spends the 12 chapters talking about the futility of all endeavors and the meaninglessness of life apart from God. Again, Merriam-Webster defines nihilism as the viewpoint that traditional values and beliefs are unfounded and that existence itself is senseless and useless. Now, the preacher is using nihilism in a different way. It's saying that nihilism for the unbeliever or those not connected to God is true for them. There is nothing for you if you live your life apart from God. That's what the preacher says. Even wisdom itself has no true value or meaning. Again, if not sought in your quest to know God better. So, again, it is believed that the preacher is saying that seeking knowledge just to have it is worthless, and as worthless as owning things just to own them. And because the Old Testament sets the stage for the new, Jesus echoes that sentiment and takes it a step further by encouraging his followers to abandon everything to gain the only thing that matters, heaven, a higher plane of existence. So nothingness expressed through these religions is the absence of value in material and physical things, even your own life, to overcome suffering and death to achieve a greater state of being. Again, the attractiveness of these concepts are undeniable, especially in the face of over-consumerism, political corruption, and immeasurable death and suffering. Maybe dropping out completely from the world isn't the move. But who wouldn't want to take a step back so as to not fall into the abyss, as the Christian would say, or keep repeating life until we get things right, as the Buddhist would say? I listened to the This Is Sun Ra playlist on Spotify while I was researching and writing my notes for this episode. It just seemed appropriate since he always seemed to be searching for more through his art and music. Yes, he had some beliefs that were a little out there. But I see myself in him as I work out my spiritual path, my place on this planet, and in my little corner of the world right here in Baltimore. Yep. Things get pretty rough, and there will be times when they get tougher. Everyone knows that. But our reaction to the rough patches, how we choose to pick up the pieces and move forward, is our journey. Now, at this point, I could jump down the rabbit hole that is existentialism and argue both points for and against nihilism, but I'm trying to stay focused today. I don't know with 100% certainty what the meaning of all this is, but I choose to make my journey to understanding a good one. To help where I can, and to always look for perspective to help me see through difficult situations. And to not read comments on Twitter, or at least stop reading them the minute they escalate. So, I'm going to take a deep breath and move on in the exhale. Next week's episode is all about sci-fi. All right, that's it for now. Be sure to send me a message via the anchor.fm app or donate. And or donate, really. Even 99 cents would be a helpful contribution. Instead of hearing just me, perhaps I could have had a religion scholar or an expert on Shakespearean plays with the help of a little loot. Please also consider leaving a favorable rating for the show on CastBox, Anchor.fm, Breaker, Radio Public, Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this show. All right. I appreciate you. Thanks for listening. Until next time.